And welcome into another edition of New Track Record. Caleb Hatch, Justin Kinney with you. Hello, Justin.
Hello, Caleb. It is race week, or I guess.
Non-points exhibition event week.
Yeah, there you go. See?
The
it pays to be specific.
$1 million challenge.
That's not $1 million.
So coming let me get this weekend. Straight.
So the original idea of the $1 million challenge was the driver would get paid $500,000.
Yes.
And a thermal member that partnered with a driver got $500,000.
Correct.
But they scrapped that part, which makes me think that not enough people were interested in partnering in this race, which kind of goes towards the narrative of this maybe not going the way they initially thought it would. But hopefully we have an entertaining main, I guess is what we're calling it, from the heat races. At least IndyCar's trying something new. It will be fascinating to watch what goes right, what goes wrong this week. But we're here to preview all of it here on New Track Record.
Yes. So we have Thermal, of course, coming up this week. And we're recording on Friday, March 22nd, Friday morning. So open tests probably going on if you listen this early afternoon on Friday while you listen. So we have that for you. Also, huge news. Let's not discount this. When they talked about some big announcements coming in the offseason, I'm sure this is one of the ones they were teasing. And IndyCar, in 100 Days to Indy Season 1, is going to a prominent streaming platform. If you missed this, so we'll get to that later this episode as well. So that's a look at some of the key things. We have our Carb Day music lineup set as well. So those are some of the highlights of what we have coming up this week on the episode.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. So we start with all things Thermal, and rightfully so. A lot of confusion, but here's what we do know in terms of what things are going to be like for Thermal. So the schedule is set. It's, as you mentioned, a $1 million challenge. It's actually not going to pay $1 million, though, to the winner. The winner is going to get $500,000. So that's the first key element in all of this. Winner gets $500,000. The purse, largest in IndyCar series, that being 1996 to present, for a race outside the Indianapolis 500.
Uh-huh.
Now, not higher than the first CART US 500, which
correct,
had a purse basically double, as I want to say Marshall Pruitt pointed out in one of his articles, or was it Nathan Brown? I'm not sure.
But that
was like, what, $3.5 million roughly?
Yes.
But so the purse, again, million to the winner, $350,000 for second, $250,000 for third, $100,000 for fourth, $50,000 for fifth, and then 6th through 27th will get $23,000 apiece.
And the great debate, as we're going to break down, is risk reward. For some of the established drivers, let's say Scott Dixon, for example, and he has been vocal this week, not necessarily criticizing the event, but also saying, I'm not taking any risks with my car and particularly and potentially damaging it and having to not only be expensive, but damage it for further events. What happens if you penetrate the tub and stuff like that? And two, because of Scott Dixon making so much money, what's another $500,000? At least the risk reward. If you have $330,000 of damage to your car, is it a risk reward type thing trying to make $500,000? Then on the other side, maybe Callum Ilott, for example, he's looking to make a big, big impression this weekend. Maybe he's in go for it mode. So you have these differentiating strategies or thought processes for this event going into the weekend. Hopefully that leads to some drama.
Yes, and we also have the race format. It'll be a 20-lap race for the winner in the main event. So, again, open test, which will be today, Friday, as we record. They'll have a test session on track. That will be from noon to 2 Eastern, and then also from 5 to 8 Eastern. That will be open test session 2. Then on Saturday from noon to 2, again, Eastern, all these on Peacock and IndyCar Live, the Saturday and Sunday sessions also on IndyCar Radio Sirius XM. But on Saturday, noon to 2, open test session 3, 4 to 6, open test session 4. So plenty of track time. And I think that's the key here. They've tested here, what, last off season, right, for the open test, and that's it. So there's going to be plenty of track time to figure things out. Then they'll do qualifying Saturday night, 8 to 8:45, also on Peacock, IndyCar Live, SiriusXM, IndyCar Radio. And then the TV window itself, 12:30 to 3 on Sunday on NBC, Peacock, all the other outlets. The main event, 20 laps, which is only 61.34 miles. But then we get into the actual format of the weekend. And again, we talked about the money. So the qualifying will have a random draw, and the field's been divided. And the field is certainly divided when you look at how the random draw has fared. So this is insane. Group one for qualifying. Joseph Newgarden, Scott McLaughlin, Will Power, Scott Dixon, Colton Herta, Kyle Kirkwood, Christian Lundgaard, Felix Rosenquist, Rinus VK, Roman Grosjean, Agustin Canapino, Santino Ferrucci, member Nolan Siegel making his debut with Dale Coyne Racing, and Stingray Robb. That's group number one. Group number two, mind you, Alex Palou, Marcus Armstrong, Linus Lundqvist, Kevin Simpson, Pato O'Ward, Alexander Rossi, Callum Ilott. So all three McLaren cars in group two. Marcus Ericsson, Graham Rahal, Pietro Fittipaldi, Tom Blomqvist, Christian Rasmussen, and Colin Brown. Colin Brown, again, getting that second opportunity. We don't know who's in that seat after Thermal in the coin car. So you have a group one that is absolutely stacked, and a group two that's some people are going to get some good qualifying opportunities.
And hopefully that leads to some exciting racing in the heats and then trying to get into the main. Again, it's going to be differentiating philosophies in terms of who's going to go for it, who's going to hang back, who's going to try to win that money, who's going to be like, it's not worth it. Hopefully they can all band together and make for a good event. But at least IndyCar is trying something. You may not agree with having it at Thermal. You may not agree with a non-points paying race. You may not agree with the pricing of the tickets and anything.
$500 now, down from $2,000.
But hopefully for IndyCar, this can be a successful event.
So the heat races themselves, each heat race will consist of 10 laps or be timed at 20 minutes apiece. Laps under full course yellow will not count. Race clock, though, will continue. They'll have a set of tires for each heat race, pit stop for emergency service only allowed. And then the top six advancing cars from each heat race will make up the 12 car field. Pole position and odd number starting spots determined by heat race winner, fastest time from qualifying, occupying the pole. Then remainder of the heat race lineup, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11. And obviously the other way around. Again, final consists of 20 laps divided into two 10 lap sprint segments with a 10 minute halftime break. So we're having a stage break, essentially.
Yeah, kind of weird.
That's odd. But during the break, every car will add fuel, so you don't have to worry about fuel. They can adjust front and rear wing angles and wickers, adjust tire pressure, and attend to the driver. All rules from the heat races. Time limit does not apply. The 40 seconds of push to pass will be reset after the halftime.
So 20 laps isn't going to be long enough to go on one fill.
Tires used during the heat race will be the replacement tire for the final if needed and approved by IndyCar.
I think something at least is easy to criticize before what we'd like to see without it playing out is just have one 20 lap main and you have to pit once somewhere, because that brings in a little bit of strategy to it. If the yellow comes out on lap two, for example, do you pit under yellow then? And then try to extend your tires and whatever until the end, or do you stay out and anticipate another caution? And if it goes 20 laps of green, then it puts a lot of pressure on your pit crew to get in and out. Maybe that's a change we'd see in year two. I don't necessarily like the halftime, the stage break, effectively. Why don't you just make it a 20-lap sprint? Everybody has to pit once for tires and fuel and see what happens.
And the other thing is, at least, it's a three-mile course through utilizing. So at least we're talking about a track that's...
It's big.
It's big, right? This is not a small track. But I'm curious to see how this will work. The biggest thing you mentioned, IndyCar is trying something. And that's all we can say, right? Everyone's saying, well, try something new. Try something different. And when they announced this, IndyCar fans were mad because of the ticket price being insane, and I understand that. But this is an event, as we said all along, it's not for IndyCar fans. Yes, it's for IndyCar fans to consume on TV and on stream. But this is an opportunity for the series to meet with other bigwigs at a cool locale, an exclusive feeling event. And again, it's not a points race. So that's why I'm okay with the limited fan aspect and the ticket price, all of that, because of the unique aspects of the event. And this is a way for IndyCar to do something different. We've said this all along. If IndyCar gets one sponsor or a team gets a sponsor out of this, or there are some business deals done, the event's worth it. Now, do I expect this event to be back next year? To be honest, with how everything's gone leading up to it, I'd be very surprised.
I don't understand the... Look, we've been vocal, too, about if you're going to have a race, give it points. But you and I, it's not a sticking point heading into this race. Is, oh, I don't know if I'm going to watch because it's not a points race type thing. It's like we see Cup do it in the middle of the season with All-Star Weekend and do that. What's the difference? Obviously, that's a much bigger event, but maybe this can develop into something like that. And it's not a points-paying event, and Cup fans don't complain about it. So, not sure why people have such... Well, I kind of know, because IndyCar fans always like to complain about everything. and on this podcast, we do a fair amount of complaining, but that's not one thing that I'm looking at and saying, well, why should we care about this race? It's not a points race. I'm just hoping it's a good event. If it can develop into an annual all-star race, maybe it's not in this spot every year. The only reason why, well, two reasons it's in this spot is because it gets damn hot at thermal when you get into the summer. And two, it's a big gap in the schedule. So if there was a non-points paying exhibition race at thermal in the off season, I don't have a problem with it. So it's all about IndyCar trying new things, and it may not check all the boxes of what we'd like to see in terms of a quote unquote new event, but it's better than nothing.
Yes. And I'm excited they're trying something, and it also fills a massive gap on the schedule, which is another factor that fans talked about. And yes, it's not perfect, right? You're still looking at a schedule gap that's pretty big because you're not having a points paying race for essentially a month and a half, but at least this gives us something. Yes. And we still have nearly what, 4 weeks to Long Beach, but it's something. And they found something to fill in that gap.
We have cars on track racing in anger, and we'll take it.
Yes. Now, we'd obviously like more tracks, and everyone loves the idea of a 20-race schedule, right? But costs have to be maintained for that. Teams have to be able to afford it, and the way it's set up, 17 races is about all they can do. That's just the reality. And unless TV ratings go up exponentially this season, and maybe this big change we're going to get to in a bit could help moving forward, we'll see. But that's the only way things are going to improve, or they get a massive bump in their TV rights fees for the incoming contract. That's the only way that there's going to be more money for the teams and for the series and to go to those 20 races, unless they get those magical three international races to start the season that we've heard about for years.
And two, you look at thermal, and it could be a place where you could find some investors. I think you're chasing the money, so to speak, at thermal. So, and otherwise, maybe event that you say, what are they doing there? Maybe turns into a fruitful partnership, whether it's for the series, whether it's for a team, whether it's for a driver, whatever. It can be beneficial, potentially. We'll see if that comes to fruition over this weekend and beyond.
So there's your preview for thermal. Do you have a favorite in this event? Like, this is such a unique format. I'm more inclined to pick someone who is charging and wants to win, like a younger driver. I have no idea what's going to happen. I think that's also maybe the exciting aspect is this format. You don't know what you will get.
This would be a perfect race for somebody like Romain Grosjean to win, an aggressive driver that hasn't won yet, that everything goes right. And everybody else is like, I'm not messing with Grosjean this week. I'm just going to get out of his way. And he win a non-points paying race, but get that IndyCar win. If I had to pick somebody in terms of my quote unquote favorite to win this race, I'm probably going to go Colton Herta.
I'm going to go Pato O'Ward.
I think we're in the same mindset. It's going to be
a young, hungry driver.
Yes.
Who's won races, but just they feel like they need a break and they're going to go for broke.
I don't see a Penske driver winning this unless they have an absolute dominating car, which is possible. It is Penske. But if it gets squirrely, I don't see Newgarden or McLaughlin or Power kind of playing that game or wanting to play that game. Same with Ganassi drivers outside of maybe a couple of their young guys. But I think, yeah, I think you look at a Herta, you look at a Pillow, you look at a Pato Award, maybe, as somebody. I think a war or Pato Award is kind of, or Alex Pillow is kind of a guy too that thinks young in terms of going at it. I could see him doing that. But some of the veterans, especially if they don't qualify well,
they're not going
to qualify from the heat for the main, aren't going to care.
Well, and the money's not enough to motivate them, especially for guys who've won in Indy 500.
Well, I should say it doesn't motivate it for Pato and Colton Herta either, for that at that matter. So,
but the idea of winning,
yes,
is the motivation.
Like, I think you're going to see somebody that hasn't won in a while is going to be more hungry than a championship contender.
Which, you know what's going to happen? It means Alex Pillow, Scott Dixon, or Joseph Newgarden are going to win.
I hope not.
I'd like to see something different. We'll see what happens. But that's our preview for Thermal. Going to be an interesting weekend. Meanwhile, we had some interesting news on the TV and broadcasting front for IndyCar moving forward. And the first thing was the fact that IndyCar, this is big, and they talk about those big off-season announcements. And we're like, okay, what are the, you know, we joked with the trading cards, right? Which is cool.
Yep.
But that clearly can't be it. Well, this clearly has to be one of them. And that's the fact that 100 Days to Indy is headed to Netflix April 4th. Also, the complete first season available now globally on Paramount Plus and the CW app. That's big.
Now, it very much is to get on Netflix, obviously the premier streaming service out there. Still, we saw what Drive to Survive did on Netflix for Formula One. Neither of us are saying that's going to happen with IndyCar, but anytime you can get on the most populated streaming app in terms of people with subscriptions is on Netflix is a big deal. And you hope that people find their way to that. And hopefully the algorithm works. Hey, if you watch Drive to Survive, maybe you'll be interested in this and it pop up with 100 Days to Indy. So I think that's the hope. And anytime you can put your product in front of more eyes, we talked about it with, you know, going from NBC SN to regular NBC and being on potentially, if you went to Fox, FS1 over USA, for example. Think of it this way. You're better off being on Netflix than you are Paramount Plus, or Paramount Plus better than the CE or CW app or whatever it is. So Netflix is the creme de la creme when you talk about streaming services, and hopefully it gains some traction there, 100 Days to Indy. And I hope, too, that season 2 of 100 Days to Indy would find its way to Netflix quicker now that the first season is on there.
Now, as far as a comparison by streaming services, by subscriber count, and this was an article, I think, posted earlier this year. So Netflix is number one, far and away.
Yes.
And they have over 260 million subscribers.
What is it, Hulu next?
Amazon Prime is next.
Then I'll say
they have just over 200 million. Then you get to Disney Plus, over 150 million is third. You have Max, 97.7 million. This one's kind of confusing though, because it used to be HBO Go and HBO Now. Then it became HBO Max.
Well, then
they just renamed it Max.
Or whatever, yeah.
And it includes several bundles put together, like Discovery Plus, Paramount Plus, 67.5 million. So still healthy audience. But you're going from this reaching 67.5 million to 260 plus million.
Yeah, it's a four-time jump, at least, from going from Paramount Plus to Netflix.
So that's how big this is for IndyCar. Now, will people latch on? Who knows? But anytime there are new sports categories, right? Sports fans love sports content on streaming services, and they especially love documentaries and limited-run series, right? I love watching that stuff.
No, me neither, or me too. So hopefully, I mean, it is. This is a big boost to IndyCar to be on Netflix, and hopefully it finds itself to a fair amount of folks that otherwise wouldn't watch it.
So this checks the box of one of those big announcements on the horizon.
Yeah.
The trading cards were cool. I don't think that was a big announcement on the horizon.
I think we liked it, but it's not big. It's not transcending the sport. I don't know if this transcends the sport, but it puts it in front of a multitude more of eyes than otherwise would see it.
And then maybe another big announcement on the horizon, the latest TV contract, which Mark Miles is hopeful as far as an increase in rights fee. The field is narrowing and the NBC deal expiring, and an interesting move announced by NBC the other week after we recorded our episode, of course, recorded early last week, and certainly raised some eyebrows. And that's the fact that Lee Diffie is going to be on the move. Lee Diffie will switch to the NASCAR booth for part of 2024. He'll take over as lead announcer for cup races in the weeks after the Olympics break.
Interesting, because we were one of the first to notice this, to see it, and tweeted it out. And you immediately start thinking he's not doing double duty. He's going to be gone from IndyCar, maybe on rare weekends where cup isn't doing anything. You wonder maybe next year, does he do the 500? But, he would. He'll be able to do the first half of the season, right?
Yes.
Next year. But who steps into that role for Lee Diffie? My thought immediately went to Kevin Lee, who has done Indy Next races the last couple years. He's stepped in in a pinch and done stuff. I would think he's maybe the natural choice. I think he's the most qualified currently in the broadcasting realm with NBC that currently does IndyCar races. But do they look outside? I don't know, but this is a very interesting development, because IndyCar is going to have to find somebody to fill that seat. And say what you want about the booth, it does have a good chemistry in there with the three-man booth.
Now, Rick Allen, who's been the lead NASCAR guy, since NBC picked NASCAR back up in 2015, he's been the lead announcer for NBC for the Cup Series and the Xfinity Series. He moved up from, I think he called trucks back in the day, right?
Yeah.
But it's unclear the exact race that Diffie will take over with NASCAR after the Olympic Games. And it's also the plan for Lee Diffie. He'll be the lead announcer for Cup races continue through the duration of 2024. They're playing for 25 and beyond. TBA. This is a fascinating move. And does this give us a clue on what they're going to do at NBC moving forward? Do they drop IndyCar, just move Lee Diffie over to NASCAR, which will be no problem for him, but also Rick Allen, like what's happening with him? This whole thing is very bizarre.
Because Rick Allen has done a handful of IndyCar races.
Uh-huh.
When Diffie's had to do like track and field championships and stuff like that. So is it just a swap?
And Dale Earnhardt Jr. obviously leaving the company, going to Amazon Prime Video and Warner Brothers Discovery for their broadcast later this summer. Well, I don't know what's going on, but this basically, to me, shows that IndyCar is going to Fox Sports.
There are certain signs that NBC is cutting back on its motorsport investment. The Dale Jr. was one thing, and it was a big thing because Dale Jr. is a big draw. And it was questioned why NBC would let him walk. Well, are they cutting back on their investments in motorsports and maybe only going to do NASCAR? I don't know. Could this be a tryout for potentially permanent assignment for Lee Diffie to NASCAR? And it is weird, too. I guess not weird, because they only get the rights after the Olympics, but I think it is, if we're trying to read between the lines, could be NBC, we're ditching IndyCar at the end of the season. Let's see how Lee does and give him a jump start on taking over that NASCAR call and see how he does.
And this from Front Office Sports, an interview with Mark Miles. Miles saying initially there are several platforms that we had great discussions with, kind of did a roadshow to get in front of them. Fox Sports is proven to be a strong contender. Miles saying they were interested when we made our last NBC deal. So this is not a newfound interest. They like motorsports, and that is true. Obviously they have NASCAR. They have NHRA as well. They've had other properties like MotoGP in the past, right? So this is not really a surprise that Fox is interested. And my guess would be that IndyCar moves to Fox for next year.
I would love to see as good as NBC has done, they've been a good partner, but we also see where this is going. Less races on network, more races on USA, and that's not going to change. We're not going back to the last couple years, in my opinion. This isn't just a one-year thing because of the Olympics type thing, okay? But I also think like the graphics package has kind of gotten stale. They don't really do a good job in terms of feature stories. I mean, that's kind of been the running joke for between you and I on the podcast is even the IndyCar series or the Indianapolis 500 pre-race is kind of like, meh, where are the real features, you know, profiling storylines in the series and history and all that stuff. Just maybe a new set of eyes, a new perspective would be good for the series. And I think Fox would bring that. I think they could bring some exciting new ideas, not taking anything away from NBC. They've done a good job, but it just kind of has gotten stale a little bit. And for better or for worse, maybe a change of scenery could shake things up.
We shall see, but it feels like, again, they're confident on getting more money and rights fee, which is key. And I think we'll have an answer come the Indy 500. That's their deadline, and trying to have a deal done by the Indy 500 Memorial Day weekend. I was saying, I don't see it exceeding that. So we'll see. We'll hold them to that.
Right.
See what happens.
No, I think the biggest advantage outside of hopefully getting more money annually is the fact that your non-network races would be on FS1 as opposed to USA.
And that's, again, FS1 at a time, and I'm not sure if this is still true, more viewers in terms of available in more homes than ESPN. Not even kidding.
Yes, it's close, but I mean, FS1 has more viewers than ESPN, let alone USA. So it would be a definite boon to IndyCar, particularly when you're looking at every metric with IndyCar that they like to tout is about total audience delivery. If you can get TAD on FS1 and stream as opposed to USA and stream, I think it helps you a lot.
Yes, very much so. And again, we'll see. ESPN has surpassed FS1, but there was a time when it was the other way around. It's still pretty close.
Yeah, so pretty close.
That's also a good sign moving forward. And while we're at it, talking about TV ratings for IndyCar, the season opening race in St. Pete, and I'm sure you've already seen this, but just
not great.
Note, not ideal, under a million. I guess the positive is they beat F1, but NBC 975,000 viewers for St. Pete, down from 1.189 million last year. You had the Big Ten women's basketball tournament final with Caitlin Clark that got over 3 million viewers. But IndyCar did beat F1. Granted, F1 was on a Saturday, IndyCar on a Sunday.
Yeah, I hate the comparison. F1 was also on ESPN.
Yes.
As opposed to
not, it's not a good comparison.
And two, I just continue to get annoyed by the, well, it was against Caitlin Clark. I mean, Bristol was up 10% against conference championship games and stuff like that in college basketball. So I hate that always excuse. Quite frankly, it was a bad rating. Anything you're under a million, especially to start your season, is bad. And it wasn't a good start for IndyCar. When you look at, they're going to have to make up some ground with network races because they have more races on USA this year. It wasn't a good start at all.
Not at all. So those are a look at some of the key things to come down over the course of the week. And again, Callum Ilott, as we mentioned, filling in for David Malukas again. And this is his opportunity. And Marshall Pro to Racer.com basically throwing out there, this is his chance. You know, if he does well this weekend, does he get a contract offer for next year? Would not be surprised.
No, me neither. So that's what we talked about. A big weekend for certain drivers, not so big for others. For him, it's a big weekend.
Very much a big weekend. Also, one other silly season note, RC Enerson, we thought they were all ready to go with Able Motorsports. Well, Marshall Pruitt of Racer.com reporting they are ready to go if they get a primary sponsor. Otherwise, a few names waiting in the wings for that 35th entry. Charlie Kimball, Stefan Wilson, Devlin DeFrancesco have been mentioned. And again, not likely that Enerson and Able Motorsports will be at the open test coming up here as well.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of, we talked about Enerson and if this gets patched together and all this, it just feels like if you're going to do it, make sure you have all your ducks in a row. Like, if you miss the open test, what's the point? So I think that's going to be a deadline, hopefully a self-imposed deadline. If you can't take part in the test, then what are you doing? You're probably going to be one of the two that gets bumped.
I will say this. They made the field with ease last year.
That is true.
And R.C. Enerson going to be racing at COTA this weekend.
That's where Cup is, right? Or NASCAR?
Yes. So you will be with SS Greenlight Racing coming up this weekend. So opportunity in the Xfinity Series for R.C. Enerson, Lucas Oil School of Racing, which is his dad runs that, the sponsor on the car.
Yeah, we'll see how he does there around the track at COTA, Circuit of the Americas.
Plenty to get to in the mailbag. We'll get to that in a bit. But first, if you agree or disagree with us, we'd love for you to interact with us. You can always find us at newtrackrecordpodcast.com. While you're there, check out the store. We have t-shirts and stickers for sale. Also, you can sign up for the email list. It is free. We'll send emails after every episode. And also, for any special announcements as well, you can follow the podcast on social media, IndyCar Podcast on Instagram, on Twitter/X, on Facebook. Just search for New Track Record. You can also email us, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. And you can support us via Patreon, patreon.com/newtrackrecord. Thanks to Xavier and others for their support, starting at just $1 a month. And as always, listen in and download the podcast for free on your favorite podcasting platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Overcast, CastBox, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, all for free. Time to get to the mailbag. We actually have quite a bit this
week.
Let's
go. What do we got
in the mailbag? So we start things off and go back further and further. It's weird, right? Because we're recording a week and a half later.
Yes, we did early show.
We did an early show last week. So getting things caught up at the moment, and several people caught off guard, right, by the early episode last week, but here we are. So we kick things off in the mailbag. We had the early St. Pete recap, and let's get to our first message. This is from Beans B Card Blog. I don't know that people turn off races in the middle, but it can't help matters that the race was pretty boring. Talking about St. Pete, not good on the ratings department.
It wasn't a good race. It wasn't a good start to the season. I know some people are like, well, they need to have more exciting race to start the season. Traditionally, St. Pete is pretty exciting. Hopefully, this is just an exception. But as you brought up before we started recording, the problem was the tires. And if the car is not changing until what we think mid-Ohio, and it's still going to be lighter than what it's supposed to be, and the tires are still being built to handle the heavier car, I guess our question is, what changes over the next 6-7 races? Is it going to be processional everywhere because of the same issue?
If tire wear is not going to be a factor, and it will be on ovals, right? So you don't have to worry about that as much. But if you have the Wiley green tire and the primary black tire, and there's not much fall off, that doesn't help the racing product.
No, not at all. And we had one stinker. Hopefully it doesn't lead to multiple stinkers.
Someone else pointing out, because _ race, someone needs to call it the fact the race was shortened by 10 laps to slot in TV times.
It led to a
boring two-stop fuel save race instead of a three-stopper that provides more action, different strategies. Yeah, you got to figure out the lap count. RacerMac RTP1 said, it's a usually unentertaining street race. Glad, though, that the gate attendance was up. In Hunter's Way 67, NBC is thrown in the towel. Hopefully this is a wake-up call to RP that he needs to invest in the series in terms of marketing, promotion, and new car engine ASAP. Well, I don't think that's changing anytime soon.
Although there's supposedly some positivity that came out of that February team meeting with Penske, which we'll talk about, I'm sure.
I'll believe it when I see it. There's always positivity, right, after
after a meeting, yeah. But
after a meeting.
It's especially a come-to-Jesus type meeting that we had in February per Marshall Pruitt. But does anything come out of it? We'll see.
People comments on Lee Diffie getting the switch to NASCAR. Jeff Cerneski says, I think that may show the direction the TV talks are going. Absolutely. N.K. Harden saying, anytime IndyCar has anything nice, NASCAR comes in and says, in a bit, it's a gift, basically stealing some food. Brian Burdick with this from Sig Domer. the classic office gif with the no from Steve Carell. Nichardson Roa said, Fox Sports, here we come. Fully agree. Luke BS37, if we lose Diff for IndyCar. Yeah, I like Diff. I know he can be polarizing for people, but I like him. This is a loss, if that is the case.
Absolutely.
I don't know how to frame it any other way.
Definitely.
And it seems like people said, Fox Sports, here we come. Callum Ilott, obviously getting the rye this weekend. Hunter's Way 67 saying, Lucas and Rossi got to be feeling the pressure for sure. McLaren, don't mess around. Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. If Ilott does anything this weekend, I'll feel pretty confident in his ability to be in that seat next year. I basically said as much. This is just another test for his ride for 25.
Especially if neither one of them win a race this year. I mean, the entire
talking
team
about Rossi and Malukas.
Correct. But, I mean, the entire team didn't win a race. But if you look at Malukas or Rossi, Rossi especially, the fact that he still gets the benefit of the doubt, but man, that dude, without that Indy 500 win, and I'm not taking the 500 win away from him, but it was on fuel mileage, okay? Without that win, is he even in the series now?
The Indy 500 sets him apart from James Hinchcliffe. That's about it.
And James Hinchcliffe is out of a ride.
Yeah.
So I look at, of those two, I mean, I think people would quickly say, well, Malukas is the guy. No, I don't think so. I think Rossi is that dude that needs to prove something this year. Needs to win at least one race.
I agree. Because if he doesn't win a race, I don't see him coming back to McLaren. In fact, the way I look at it, if he doesn't win a race this year, the real question mark is he full-time next season? I know that sounds crazy, and I get that there will be suitors, but at some point, you know, we saw this with Simon Pagenaud, right, where he had a couple chances, and unfortunately his career was cut short with the concussion, the crash at Mid-Ohio.
Right.
But do you think he would have been full-time regardless this year? I don't think so.
If he doesn't win a race this year, that's one win in the last five seasons. That's
says something.
It does say something. Says something bad. His only win coming in 2022 at the second road course race at Indy.
This from Beans B-Card blog. I'm with Andretti on his Penske comments. In my eyes, Penske's legacy is being tarnished by what he hasn't done since buying any car in IMS. I wonder if others agree with me on that. I don't know. I guess we all expected Penske to come in and fix everything. And it's the pandemic was the excuse and a valid reason for 2020, obviously, in 2021. But really since, it's been the same old, same old.
And I think when you read between the lines and people saying what kind of happens behind the scenes is basically you don't want the wrath of Roger Penske, because apparently this is a story. It's like, if you're pushing for something and you set him off, he'll immediately shut down with that idea. Cause we've always talked about like, well, what are the team owners so afraid of? Well, sounds like Roger Penske is a guy that if you make him mad, he'll just not take up your idea. He'll just shut you out. And I think that's what the threat is to the team owners, is you bring ideas. They could be the best ideas ever. But if you piss off Roger Penske, they won't go anywhere. And that's kind of where I think the series is at. And the frustrations have boiled over with Michael Andretti. And he was the most vocal publicly, but it sounds like plenty of the team owners have said things privately or off the record. And of course, in this closed door meeting, it happened in February. Of course, Roger Penske or Chip Ganassi is towing the company line, because why would he want to change anything? Because
he's winning.
Him and Roger are dominating the series. Them. So why is Chip going to push for anything? But everybody else has major issues. And apparently if you bring those issues to Roger Penske and he doesn't like your delivery, he'll just shut you out. And finally, I think the team owners banded together and as a collective went to Roger Penske. And maybe that has a little bit more of staying power and a benefit to approaching Roger Penske as opposed to individually and see if anything happens. But so far, nothing of consequence has come out of it.
You put up a poll, interest level in thermal this weekend for IndyCar. 36.5% said try new things is good. That's where I stand. 32% I'll watch, I guess. 27.5% said can't wait. Nearly 4% said won't watch. A couple of replies here. Big D Cart, how'd they get the weird name Thermal? Well, it's in Thermal, California. Beans B Cart blog saying not that interested in non-points events. However, it's any car and I will watch. We'll get enough racing and I'll take anything I can get. I think that's the number one takeaway here. They at least have another event on, because the counterpoint is you'd be off from March 10th to April 21st.
Not ideal. And it's almost like starting the season again, which is what kind of what it's going to be a little bit. And you kind of fumbled the first start because the TV rating was not good. I imagine, is this a NBC race this weekend?
Yeah.
So I'd prefer this one be a USA and
right?
promote one of the USAs to NBC, but I have a hard time believing people are going to tune in droves to this race, but we shall see. You needed something in this spot, and IndyCar, for the criticisms they get, it's not like they haven't been trying to find a race to plug into this gap. They just haven't been able to find anything concrete, and they were able to work a deal out for Thermal, and you know what? I'd rather have this event than nothing at all, and you have a 6-week break, because it's not like they haven't been trying to fill that 6-week break with a race.
Polo Shevchenko saying it's a completely new track, and if a driver goes for it and it doesn't work out, it doesn't torpedo the season. I think that's a pretty exciting combo. On the flip side, the championship contenders don't want to crash a car. Jeremy from HBG saying non-points racing should lead to some interesting decisions. And Nick J. Fletcher said, I mean, it's better than watching the 2009 St. Pete race like I did last weekend, so there's that. At least it's live Indy cars.
Yes. Agreed. It's better than no cars on
no
track.
Fantasy Indy car this weekend either.
Nope, no fantasy Indy car this week.
So keep that
in mind.
I'm in
sixth, by the way, after one race.
I'm not doing well. I don't know where I'm at, but I know it's not
shake
well.
Shake it off. 16 more events. Break.
That's true.
Just shake it off.
That's true. So that does it for the mailbag this week. Time for news and notes. Actually, I have a lot of other things to get to on here. So we have some sponsor announcements. We have some bit of driver news as well. So let's go with the latest and greatest to stuff further back. So congrats to Catherine Legg and Takuma Sato. They're the 2024 honorees for the Long Beach Motorsports Walk of Fame. Legg, first female honoree. With the plaque on the downtown Shoreline Drive. So congrats to both of them. Also in driver announcements, speaking of Takuma Sato, they released his number 75 car, Ray Hall, with Omada. The full release of the car with some of his other longtime partners, of course, Honda, Panasonic, Deloitte as well. So his rocket ship for the 500. Also, speaking of Long Beach, this is interesting. AT&T. This is from Adam Stern, signed on with Long Beach to promote its in-car Wi-Fi product with race title sponsor Acura that they have in their road cars. So AT&T will bring a cell on wheels portable cell tower to improve coverage for people at the race. Shot at Verizon. I like it. This is good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a series deal. It's a race deal. That's yes. Why people are like, well, how are they able to do that? Well, it's not with the series. It's with the promoter and the race itself. So, but pretty cool, because that's a heck of a lot of people in a small confined space at Long Beach. You got to make sure you get your Wi-Fi signal, all that stuff, and AT&T is going to be a big part of it.
So that's big. We had IndyCar drivers competing at Sebring. Congrats to Colton Herta and Kyle Kirkwood, who got wins in their classes last weekend. And for Colton Herta, this is big for him. He joins Elite IndyCar Company by this after an overall victory at Sebring. So only other drivers to have IndyCar drivers to win an overall crown at Sebring over the last 30 years. You have Sebastian Bourdais, Ryan Hunter-Reay, and Scott Sharp.
In the Patron car.
Yeah. Before that, other racers. Now this is in recent years, in the last 30 years. Before that, you had Ari Leindike, Foyt, Al Holbert, Mario Andretti, Dan Gurney, other open wheel racers to score overall win. Kyle Kirkwood won in the GTD Pro class as well.
Nice.
And former IndyCar driver, Jack Hawksworth, part of that team. So congrats to them on that, getting some wins, obviously a big deal. Elsewhere in race news, so we talk about sports cars, we know some of the IndyCar schedule for next year, because Long Beach for IMSA, the 25 IMSA schedule already out, which is very impressive. But Long Beach, April 11th and 12th, so we know IndyCar will be that weekend at Long Beach. And then the other thing, Detroit, May 30th and 31st for IMSA, so we know it will be that weekend for IndyCar as well.
All right, so it's already coming together for 2025.
Yes.
It has a 2024 race yet.
And speaking of 2024 and the IndyCar schedule, the Ontario Honda dealers are the title sponsor of the Indy Toronto event this
year. Yeah, so it used to be Honda Indy Toronto. Now it's the Honda area
dealers.
Ontario area Honda dealers.
Easy for us to say.
Yes.
Scott Dixon, he was honored and inducted into the Motorsports Hall of Fame last week, so congrats to him. And a sponsor announcement, JM Bullion will make their motorsports debut, official precious metals trading partner on Marco Andretti's number 98 IndyCar for the Indy 500. And speaking of Andretti, Andretti Global driver Jamie Chadwick, they've launched a documentary series called The Next Step. Offered behind-the-scenes look at her first season in Indy Next. First episode out now.
All right, that's out there.
Check that out and see if she can have a bounce-back season in year number two. A couple of future race news. This is from Jefferson Kern, who covers Brazil and IndyCar. Efforts in Brazil, they're laying the groundwork to bring IndyCar back. Here we go, for the first time since 2013.
Okay, laying the groundwork. That means just barely started the process.
Carb Day lineup is set as well. Thoughts on this? George Thorogood and the Destroyers. That's the headliner, featuring the Gin Blossoms and Kid Quill. I've heard of the Gin Blossoms. I didn't recognize George Thorogood's name, but then I recognized some of the songs. So, I don't know.
I've never considered Carb Day directed towards my demographic.
Same.
But it does at some point need to freshen its look, I guess, because those 20s and 30 somethings that went to the Carb Day in the 80s and 90s are now 50s and 60s, and eventually you're going to have to turn the page. I think they've done a really good job with the Snake Pit, obviously getting people in that otherwise wouldn't go to the race. But I'm looking at Carb Day going, the acts are getting older and older, and the core group of people going to Carb Day are older and older. Like, Carb Day back in the day was a religious experience. Like, everybody took it off. You know, there's old video of everybody lining up at the gate when they open it. You know, you booked your way in and cars. It was like debauchery. It was chaos. But it's still that same demographic that treats it that way. There's just not a lot of 20-somethings that are going to Carb Day. They may be going to Race Day, the Snake Pit, and that's great. But eventually you have to kind of turn the page on Carb Day. And look, I'm a Gin Blossoms, I'm a fan of them, but George Thorogood, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't affect me, but at the same time, it's going to affect the bottom line of the series and the track if you don't at some point turn the page on the demographic you're targeting for Carb Day. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Also, speaking of Carb Day, here's the real concern. Tickets are $45 right now, and the price increases in May to $50. That's insane. I don't know about you, but that's like, this used to be $30 just a few years ago.
Yeah.
I find that to be insane.
Well, when it's carrying the entire series, the money you're raising at IMS, I guess.
True.
It'll go up sometimes.
Really good article in motorsport.com from Joey Barnes talking about Nashville and the challenge for Firestone tires. Worth a read. I mean, again, racing on a concrete, they've not tested there in years. This is going to be a huge challenge for IndyCar and Firestone to figure this out. So worth checking that out. Also, this from Adam Stern, Joe Saward, who has his F1 kind of blog. Some in F1 think that Renault could sell Alpine and focus just on being an engine supplier, which might help Michael Andretti get an entry and be able to run from 25 to 27 before Cadillac power units arrive in 2028. That would be big. I mean, it can't be worse than the embarrassment that is Williams this weekend. Yeah,
can they buy Williams? And even the team principal, James Vowles, coming up and saying it's unacceptable in modern day Formula One.
Yet for what's you going still on. Have a Yet, team.
Yes, you still have a team. Like, you are getting hundreds of millions of dollars and you can't have a spare. So if you miss that, what's going on? Alex Albon crashed in free practice one late last night. So instead of having a spare because he seriously damaged the chassis and they needed a spare, they don't have a spare. So Logan Sargeant gets taken out of his car. I could argue that he deserves to be taken out of the car, but not in this situation. He's basically benched for Alex Albon because the team doesn't have a spare. In 2024 in Formula One, with billions of dollars being thrown around, you don't have a third car. That's insanity. And meanwhile, Andretti can't get into the series.
I understand that Williams is a legacy name in Formula One, but the Williams family have nothing to do with the team.
Not anymore.
And if the current people in charge can't handle it, they shouldn't be in the series. This is it's embarrassing.
If you can't invest in a spare car, what are you doing? I don't care how many millions of dollars you're losing, whatever. Like, you have to have a spare car. It's embarrassing, like you said, at minimum. And it should be required by Formula One, FIA, whatever, to have spare cars at the track. At least one. If you wreck two, that's understandable. And okay, we have a spare, we don't have two spares. But not to have a single spare at all? Come on.
Meanwhile, Zach Brown getting a contract extension, the McLaren Racing CEO, will be in his role until at least 2030. So congrats to Zach Brown.
Yeah, congratulations, Zach. I like Zach. I like how he's bigger than IndyCar because of McLaren and Formula One being the focus. But I like him being the thorn in the side of Chip Ganassi a little bit. You know, I would like to see McLaren have more success because I like Zach Brown. Hopefully it comes this year, maybe. For McLaren, but he's been a worthy addition to the paddock. The team has been a worthy addition to the paddock. It's raised the bar for everybody, I think. Maybe not on track, but financially, definitely. And congratulations to him on the extension. We're just waiting on that invite to go check out McLaren HQ.
Yes, without a doubt. All right, no tweets of the week to get to. Anything else we missed, or are we ready for our random split error driver of the week?
I think we're ready for our random split error driver of the week. So last week we went IRL. We went with Jeff Bucknum. Maybe we'll go with somebody that is familiar to deep divers like you and I, but maybe not other people. We're going to 2005 in the Champ Car Series and going with Tarso Marquez.
Hey!
How about that? Actually competed, and I didn't know this, competed in almost as many, I think more, Formula One races than he did in Champ Car, which I found fascinating.
I did not know that.
He raced, let's see, 26. He started 26 Grand Prix,
or at least Grand Prix.
Grand Prix, sorry. He entered 26 Grand Prix, started 24 in Formula One. But in Champ Car, kart slash Champ Car, he raced portions of four different seasons in different iterations of the series. He made his debut in 1999 with Team Penske, finished 14th at Motegi, and was 9th at Brazil that year. He then went to Dale Coyne Racing for most of the 2000 season, had one top 10. That was the season finale at Fontana. He was 10th at Detroit Then he was gone for several years. Came back in 2004, three races with Dale Coyne Racing that year. And then 2005, one and done at Cleveland, finished 11th there at the airport circuit. But has done, as I said, Formula One racing, his high finish of 9th a couple times with Minardi in 2001. He also did some Stock Car Brazil and most recently did that in 2018. But after he finished up his Champ Car outing in 2005, returned to South America, did TC 2000 in addition to that Stock Car Brazil.
Which, that's the series that Agustin Canapino did, right?
I do believe as well. He caught the eye of Roger Penske in 1999. And when Al Unser Jr. was injured that season, he was the fill-in for him. and did six races that year. He did five races in the Penske PC 27 and then did a Lola chassis at Cleveland. But then that was it for his career at Team Penske. Then got some spot starts at Dale Coyne after it was almost full season in 2000. So he drove, he said, this is interesting, whoever wrote this Wikipedia. He drove sporadically in the series in 2000, 2004, and 2005 for perennial minnows Dale Coyne Racing. Okay. Not necessarily wrong. But, and then it goes into his Formula One. He was actually raced beside Fernando Alonso with Minardi in 2001. And financial difficulties, not always allowing equal equipment for both drivers. He brought no money to the team, was employed under the provision that another driver with more sponsorship money could replace him at any point in the season. That prospect was realized toward the end of the season in 2001 Formula One, when a Minardi eventually fired Marquez and thus replaced him with Alex Jung with three races remaining.
There we go.
So
Tarso Marquez.
Tarso Marquez. Yeah, I had some starts, but saw some action in Formula One and was... When we talk about the guys that Penske finds and turn into big stars, Tarso Marquez wasn't that. He was targeted by Penske. He was a rookie in Champ Car / Kart 1999. It was Kart then, right? 1999?
Yeah, it would have been Kart.
He comes in, replaces Al Unser Jr., only one top 10 in six starts. He wasn't what Roger Penske thought he was going to be. And then had a lot of starts for Dale Coyne Racing, but never materialized into maybe a star that Penske thought he would be. But still, just 48 years old, Tarso Marquez, this week's random split era driver of the week.
And with that, that does it for us this week as well. We'll be back next week to recap Thermal. I'm sure it'll be a fascinating weekend. No idea what to expect. And we'll talk all about it next week. For Justin Kinney, I'm Caleb Hatch. Thanks for joining us on New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media.